Blog Talk Radio.
It don't take much strength to pull a trigger, but try and get up every morning, day after day, and work for a living. Let's see him try that. Then we'll see who's the real tough guy.
Welcome to Ray and Tay today.
Party people say.
Hey, everybody. It's Ray. That's Tall Rayside.
Yeah, man. And it's Tay. And I woke up this morning to do some sports radio. Eric Taylor. And it is a new day. Listen, we're on from 7 to 8 Eastern. So sit back, relax, enjoy some sports. You guys want to get involved, give us a call at 718-664-9098. You want to email us? We've been getting a lot of love on the email, so thank you. It's Ray, RAEANDTAYTODAY, RayandTayToday@gmail.com. The same for Ray and Tay Today at the Twitter. You want to send your little tweets. And like us on Facebook, man. Show us that love. You know, send us stuff on Facebook. We, you know, appreciate it. Friends, family, strangers, and everybody's, you know, our friends. So, Ray, why don't you break down what's popping off on Wednesday's show today?
All right. We got a good Wednesday show for you. We'll talk a little baseball. We'll talk about the pennant races heating up. We'll talk about the MVP races in the American and National Leagues. We got our Wednesday segment, Where You At? Where You At Wednesday?
Where You At?
Where You At? Hopefully this will be another head scratcher. We got a couple of listener emails that we'll take, and of course we'll preview Thursday night's game, Giants and Panthers.
All right, that sounds good to me. Let's jump
let's talk some baseball. First of all, update for those who don't know, the Yankees won this afternoon. They had a game rained out, so they won. Andy Pettitte, coming off of his injury, hadn't pitched in a month and a half, went 75 pitches. Yankees won 4-2. Andy Pettitte looked excellent, actually, coming off of his broken foot. So Yankees look good. It's a day-night doubleheader. Actually, they're starting their second game at 7. The game of the night last night was, I don't know if you caught some of that on the West Coast, but it was the Orioles and the Seattle Mariners going 18 innings. I tell you what,
they
don't go away.
Well, that's what's so great about Baltimore. I mean, they are just scrappy. With the Yankees getting that win, we're, I guess, just a half a game up on them.
Half game up.
With 84 wins, and they got 84 wins, so we'll see what happens tonight. But, you know, the AL East is a fight. I mean, it looks like the Rays kind of fell out of it and might even fall out of the wild card with being 6 games back. But Yankees and Orioles, it looks like it's going to go to the wire. So it's good to have Pettitte back. We hope, you know, CeCe's next start is a little bit more impressive. And, you know, we need to drive in runs. Like you said on last week's show, the Yankees leave a lot of men on base. And they need to really just have some timely and clutch hitting. But what do you think about the AL Central in terms of that race? It probably won't be a wild card, but the White Sox are up about 3 games on Detroit. Is Detroit done?
Yeah, I think they're done. I think that Detroit, we'll get into the MVP segment. We'll talk a little about Miguel Cabrera. But I think Chicago, look, there's only 15 games left. And I think Chicago is up 3. And they're going to win the Central over Detroit. And I think Texas is up 3. And they're going to win the West over Oakland. So to me, the Central and West, to make up 3 games in 15 is not impossible. But I don't see it happening. I think all of those teams are fighting for playoff, fighting for that second wild card. Because to me, what's going to happen is it looks like Oakland is pretty much locking down that first playoff spot. And probably the loser of Yankees-Baltimore will get the second one because right now the Angels are 3 games behind Baltimore right now, who's a half game behind the Yankees. So The Angels are 3 games behind Baltimore, and Detroit's 5.5 behind them. Tampa's out of it, I think, at 6, with 6 games back in the loss column.
Right, but Oakland's really right. They're definitely a lock.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're 4 games.
Well,
up
I mean,
on the
Baltimore
Angels,
and Oakland both with 84 wins. So yeah.
Yeah, but look in the loss column because you can't make up losses. Right, so I think Oakland's up 4 in the loss column on the Angels. So to catch them with 15 games to go, that's tough. That's tough.
Well, no, but I'm just saying that's the Angels. It's Oakland and the Orioles that would get the 2 wild cards right now with 63 losses and 64 losses.
Right. So what I'm saying is I think Oakland is for sure. It looks like Oakland's going to make the playoffs. And then it comes down to, you know, I don't see the Angels catching Oakland and bumping them out. If anything, the Angels will catch Baltimore or the Yankee loser. But still, that's 3 games. Again, 3 games to make up in 15. I don't know that that's happening.
Right. Well,
but
if they play each other, hey, you know, all you got to do in a head-to-head series is win your series. You know, and that's what it comes down to when these teams play each other. You know, can the Angels beat Texas? Can the A's beat the Angels and Texas, you know, that combination of those three in the AL West.
Sure.
You know, it's the one thing I give the A's credit about, man, this is like Moneyball Part 2. They really are doing this with just a limited budget and, you know, they got a scrappy bunch of guys over there. So, you know, kudos to the Oakland A's. Listen, I feel like we're in the 70s, man. The Orioles, the Yankees, the A's. The Cincinnati Reds.
You know what they
should
do? They should just go throwback 70s uniforms for the playoffs. Just go all the way 70s for the playoffs. How cool would that be?
Well, listen, I know some upset, you know, out here in Arizona, I know there's a lot of people from Michigan and Iowa and Wisconsin, and so I know my good friend who rehabbed me over at Rehab Plus, Denise is a Detroit Tiger fan, so she might be listening, so I definitely want to shout her out, and I wish for her that her Tigers definitely, you know, can make it, because she's, you know, she's a big Tiger fan, so I feel their pain, you know, because everybody thought the Tigers were going to, you know, they made all those moves. I mean, there's no way that you didn't think the Tigers and Angels would not be winning their divisions, or at least both be in the playoffs. And now the Detroit Tigers and L.A. Angels could both be out, and that would be the story of the season.
That's why they play the game.
Yeah,
but as we'll get into with the MVP talk, I mean, there's nothing to worry about in Detroit. I mean, between Verlander and Fielder and Miguel Cabrera, that's a heck of a nucleus to build around. And then they'll get healthy, and they'll get, you know, all their players back. Detroit Tiger fans, they have –
They're going to be good for a while. Their pitching is good. Their starting pitching. I'm not so sure about their relief, but, you know, I'm a little suspect.
My man Max Scherzer had him on the baseball fantasy, with leading the league in strikeouts, killing me on ERA, but doing great in strikeouts.
What about
Marcus Slareth's son. That's right.
Yeah. So.
That good gene pool. Stinks gene pool. But, yeah, let's move to the National League. It looks like the race to look at is obviously the NL Central. So in the NL East, Washington's going to win that. They got 5.5 game lead over the Braves. And in the West, San Francisco just ballooned. They went 3-7 in their last 10, and they 7-3, you know, won 7 out of the last 10. So the Giants basically are running away with it. And
the Reds
are
playing great ball, man. 89.
Yeah,
wow.
And the biggest lead of them all is the Reds in the. Of any
they're killing St. Louis.
In the Central, yeah.
St. Louis is still holding on to that second wild card.
Yeah, and so the wild card in the National League looks very juicy because you got Atlanta and St. Louis right now. So Atlanta's a lock for that number one.
Atlanta's
team.
A lock.
Yeah, essentially
you've
got
Milwaukee's only 2.5 back behind St. Louis. And and then what's up with the Dodgers?
Well, you
got the
Dodgers at a game and a half back. You got the Dodgers at a game and a half back. Milwaukee at 2.5 back. And then if you want to stretch the imagination, Pittsburgh is 3.5 back. But I can't see that happening.
Pittsburgh and Arizona is 4.5, yeah.
Yeah, but it really comes down to the Dodgers and the Brewers trying to catch the Cardinals for that second spot.
But, you know, it's very possible. I mean, you just – look – you know, it's a couple of weeks left in the season. It's a stretch run, the end of September. It's going to be interesting, fascinating, and good for Major League Baseball by adding the second wild card. It definitely has, you know, made the division important again, and then it's also made more, you know, more competitive baseball for that, for the wild card spots. And it keeps a little bit, you know, a couple more cities alive for the last 2 months of the season because their teams still have a chance.
The only complaint is that, and I think you live with this complaint, but the only complaint is that you play 162 games and you have to come down to one game. You play essentially a play-in game, and you're especially mad if you are, let's say, Oakland, who finishes with the fourth best record, but possibly the second best record in the league, in the American League, and then the Braves, who's the fourth ranked team, and they have to play a one-game playoff against you know, a team that they potentially feel that they're much better than. So that team that finishes fourth, that would have gotten a series, now has to play one game against the fifth seed.
But you know what, T? I think they're going to get it right. I think it should be the best out of three, and the team with the higher seed will just get the advantage of having two out of the three home games. But I think what they're going to do is it's going to have to be 1-1-1 and do the best out of three. Just having it one game, they might do it for a year or two, but they're going to see that it's not as fair and it doesn't work. But having a two out of three, I think that works a little bit better. You know?
Maybe. That might be the answer. They might be worried about pushing baseball into November, which obviously they did with 9/11. But after that, you know, they want baseball to end late. You know, late October.
And who's Mr. November, baby? Derek Jeter.
Well, November. We lost in game seven.
Can I tell you? Shout out to the Diamondbacks, though, and the, you know, their great manager, Bob Brenly. But I tell you, that hurt us Yankee fans.
That was a heck
it
of a
really
World
hurt.
All those one-run games, BK Kim in the Bronx, losing games 3, 4, and 5, all of them heart-wrenching games.
Ugh.
Wow. Each team won their home game, so it was basically the Diamondbacks having home field advantage. The Yankees get it, that home run from Soriano, what was that, in the sixth inning of game seven,
yeah.
And then Mariano not being able to hold the lead. That's
but
how great Mariano is.
I think it came
is.
Down to, you know, the clutch hitting of Arizona and really Randy Johnson and Schilling. They're pitching, man.
Yeah, that was
and
fantastic.
And Gonzalez, whatchamacallit, who was the Gonzalez for them was big, too.
Yeah, although the winning run was basically a blooper over Jeter's head. But anyway,
no.
We digress. Let's talk a little bit.
Let's talk AL MVP. I mean, let's jump into you know, a lot of people have been, you know, talking about the potential of Cabrera getting the Triple Crown, which hasn't been done forever. And what's interesting is that he's two homers behind Josh Hamilton. But when you think about MVP, you have Cabrera, you have Hamilton, you have some people talking about Derek Jeter. But to me, the MVP is just like our boy Fred Lynn, who did it back in, 75, where it's going to be probably Trout from the Angels, who is much better than Cabrera defensively. But you know what's interesting about Trout and just all he's doing with the Angels? Could be Rookie of the Year and also MVP. But this guy is putting up numbers that, like, are some of the great numbers of all time, that they're comparing him to even the Mickey Mantle, for heaven's sakes, which is just kind of like, whoa. But he's possibly going to have over 25 homers and over 40 stolen bases with over 125 ribbies. And those type of numbers are, I mean, those are Hall of Fame numbers.
Yeah, no, his RBIs aren't that great. No, what happened was the problem for Mike
Trout. Oh, I'm sorry, batting over 330.
The problem with Mike Trout, not the problem. I mean, the guy is a legitimate MVP. I mean, I'm taking Miguel Cabrera. I'll tell you why in a sec. But Mike Trout he missed the first couple weeks of the season because he was still in the minor leagues. They just brought him up, so he's only played 125 of their 147 games. So
he was still
20
fishing.
Games.
The Trout was
still
fishing the big fish.
Exactly. He was still drinking the Similac. He was still on the floor.
Well, I can't penalize him for that. And honestly, I don't know. I think because of how great he is defensively, he's robbed some homers. I mean, he's had a great season. I think with neither one of the teams making the playoffs, I bet you Trout gets MVP over Cabrera.
Well, so that's an interesting point. That was to me, that was going to be the tiebreaker. First of all, as much as it hates me as a Yankee fan, you've got to shout out the Boston Red Sox, because what we're about to talk about here is potentially Miguel Cabrera hitting a triple crown, which hasn't been done since Carl Yastrzemski, Yaz, did it in 1967. And then, if he wins the MVP, he may or may not win the triple crown. But then the other guy who's going to win it, if Cabrera doesn't win it, is Mike Trout, and he's going to definitely win AL Rookie of the Year. So if Mike Trout wins it, then he's Freddie Lynn all over again, like you said, in 75. Now, Ichiro did it as well in 2001 when he came in the league, but Ichiro is no rookie. I mean, Ichiro was...
He was a veteran in Japan.
He was a star in Japan. But I mean, this kid is Freddie Lynn. I mean, Mike Trout, you're right, defensively is really unbelievable. This dude is really a star in the making. And is he 20 years old? I mean, he's
No, baseball's in good hands. I mean, there are some good young players that, you know, hopefully are clean and drug-free, but... Somebody like him, man, you got to love seeing it. I'm a big Hamilton fan. When that guy comes up to bat, him and Cruz on the Texas Rangers, when you're watching them, especially in the playoffs, you just feel like any swing, it could be gone. You know?
Well,
it's fantastic, man. It just makes baseball so exciting, you know? Especially
well,
last part of the season and the playoffs, you know?
Well, that's why Miguel Cabrera, to me, is the ultimate offensive weapon. Now, you could say the tiebreaker goes to Mike Trout and the fact that he's got 40 – you realize he has 46 stolen bases and has only been caught four times? So he's
No, that's what I'm saying.
Stolen bases.
I mean,
and
if you think about it, it's like Ricky Henderson – not Ricky with the speed, but, I mean, these numbers are –
he's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's very efficient. I mean, his on-base percentage must be crazy.
Yeah, 396.
Yeah, I mean
his OPS is 954 for like a center fielder. He's got 27 homers, 77 RBIs, and 46 stolen bases. I mean, this
kid
is unbelievable.
Over 25 homers. That's what it is. Yep.
Yeah.
Batting .336 right now.
He's batting .327 right now.
.327. Okay.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So as great as Mike Trout is, Miguel Cabrera is a guy that. You fear, and the fact that he is Cecil Fielder, so back to your Detroit connection out there in Arizona.
Prince Fielder, the Prince.
Fielder, yeah, the Prince, the fresh Prince of Detroit, he has got support behind him. So you got to figure the future is bright. Miguel Cabrera is only 29 years old, but when Miguel Cabrera comes up and I'm an opposing pitcher, I'm scared. I'm scared of Miguel Cabrera.
You're a shook one. He's Mob Deep in you. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm Shook Knight.
He's straight Mob Deep in you, yo.
So I'm scared. I'm scared because Miguel Cabrera can hit to all fields. The one thing he doesn't have is speed, obviously, because he's a big dude.
Listen, he's an assassin with the bat like two of the worst baseball villains ever, Manny Ramirez and Albert Bell. Those guys were just, woof, especially Manny. Manny, with that stick in his hand, was nasty.
True. So bottom line is, I think, right now I go with Cabrera, you go with Trout. I think the 15 games might determine. If one of those teams makes the playoffs, that might be the tiebreaker that gives it to the other guy. But we'll check in next week. We'll probably have a stronger opinion next week.
Next week we'll really get into the Cy Young, which is going to be fascinating. But let's look at the NL MVP. Which is not as exciting, you know. Hey, before they shut down your boy in Washington, I could have been like, hey, let's give it to a pitcher. You know, even though the other guy, what's the good?
Joe Gonzalez just got his 19th win.
Well, I was going to say Gonzalez to me is clearly the Cy Young, but we'll talk about that because he actually is having a better year. But he could be an MVP candidate. But so you got Braun. I like Buster Posey. Obviously, the Giants are winning the division, and catcher, and then Molina with the Cardinals.
Yadier, one of the Molina brothers.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Benji Molina. We might have to
shout
get him
out
on
to their
Ryan
parents.
Tate today.
Wait, shout out
yeah.
to their parents.
The Molina family. That's what
exactly.
I want to talk to him about. Like, what'd your daddy do? But
how
you know
do
what's
you
fascinating?
Get three MLB catchers, all of them with rings. They all have.
Wait,
titles.
But I want to tell you the story. And you know, and he'll tell it when he, if we can get him on the show. But what's so fascinating is that his father, the Molina brothers, didn't make the main team. And you know, from and where they're from, I think they're Cuba, right? Or Venezuela, maybe. But they didn't make the main team, so the father started like a B team, right? And the brothers were all on the B team. So they weren't on like the A team in their country and traveling and stuff like that. They were on the B team. And from the B team, these guys all became great players and studs and made it to Major League Baseball. So to me, that's what's really fascinating,
wow.
You know. I mean, so, I mean,
Puerto
shout
Rico,
out to
Puerto Rico. The Molinas of Puerto
yeah,
Rico.
Yeah, shout out to the Molinas and also shout out to Bob Dabalina and Del the Funky Homo Sapien. But listen, let me tell you something, man. I'm going to just state my bias, and I'm going to say like this. I'm not giving Braun any MVP or any MVP votes. If I had one, he wouldn't get it. The guy got caught cheating. He got off on a technicality. And I'm just disgusted by it, and I'm sick and tired of it, you know. And I'm not, you know, it's just ridiculous.
I, you know what? And in that vein, I also would hate to see it, but Major League Baseball said they won't object to the fact that Melky Cabrera might still win the batting title because he's leading by 7 percentage points, and if it stays over Andrew McCutchen. So Melky
right.
is 346, and I think he has enough at-bats to qualify, and Major League Baseball said they'll let it stand if he wins the batting title. So, yeah.
And isn't that
I
hypocrisy? I mean, that's
that.
Just – it makes no sense to me. I mean, either you're against it and you're trying to clean up the game, or you're sort of like, well, yeah, he got caught, but what he did for the season is still okay. Well, he did it while he was, you know, using stuff to enhance his skills. To get a new contract, and we can't hate on him because he's an ex-Yankee. But I'm just being honest and real. Like Melky messed up. You can't support that, and he doesn't deserve the batting title. Your boy McCutchen. First of all, any Pittsburgh Pirate, I want them to make the playoffs. And McCutchen to me should get the batting title and the MVP. He's had, and I mean, what a young, amazing talent, and great for the Pirate fans.
I hope he stays. I hope he stays in Pittsburgh.
Well,
because, you know,
yeah,
I remember
you want them to keep him for a long-term deal. And you know what, though? To the Pirates and to the Royals and these teams, don't wait till it's the year up for these guys. You know, same with Seattle. Don't wait. You know, sign them to a long-term deal, you know, like Minnesota did with Justin Monroe.
But it's coming back to bite them, though, because – now they're on the hook, right? Morneau's got the concussion issues, and he's never been the same. And Joe Mauer, they signed 8 years at $23 million a year, so they're stuck with his contract. And now he, in the year that they signed him, right before they signed him, he hit for power. But since then, he can't hit for power. And he's got, you know, he's a great catcher, and they've been moving him, trying him other places in the outfield and first base and whatnot. But
right,
ultimately...
If you want to be a great hitter, you can't be catcher forever.
Contract. They're stuck with this contract. So I hear what you're saying, and you're right. You know, they need to lock down McCutchen. They need to lock down all of their young stars. I mean, A.J. Burnett had a renaissance in Pittsburgh. So
yeah,
good for them.
He would, too.
Yeah. But back to the MVP, I give it to Buster Posey because over Ryan Braun. Well, first there's the steroids issue, but let's just put that aside. I think Buster Posey is playing a much more difficult position. I always give a premium to shortstop, to catcher, to, you know, even center field,
yeah.
Playing a more
right
difficult
middle.
Position. He's batting .333, so he's in the hunt for the batting title. 22 homers, 93
yep.
RBIs for a catcher coming off of an injury last season. Remember he had that horrific play at home plate where he broke his leg. So
early
me,
in the season, too. Yeah.
And his team's going to make the playoffs, whereas Ryan Braun's team is probably not. Now, not completely Ryan Braun's fault because you take Cecil Fielder, Prince Fielder off that team, and that's a lot of firepower.
Oh, yeah, and there's no way they're the same, yeah.
But, yeah,
there's
I like
no
Buster.
No way
like
they
Buster.
Could be the same. But, you know, that's why I, you know, I really like Posey. To me, I give it to McCutcheon or Posey. So, you know, that's sort of how we stand. Next week, Ray and Tay, well, you know, probably next Wednesday. But we'll, you know, obviously keep you posted on the pennant races, and we'll probably get into the Cy Young. So let's take a quick break, and Ray and Tay today will be right back, and we'll jump into Where You At. Ray.
Where you at, Tay?
Now, listen,
right
listen.
Here.
Let the folks know that I came up with a cookie with this one. This one was pretty good.
Yeah.
We bounced
so
around some ideas and some thoughts, and we're always open
ideas.
To taking some suggestions from our audience. And listen, we have received some emails from you guys, but right now we're just focusing on NFL. So if you have a where you at, a former athlete for the NFL, we're going to focus on that for, like, you know, September and October. But as we get closer to NBA, we'll definitely, when the season gets kicked in late October, early November, we will definitely get hard involved with the Where You At with some old NBA, you know, players and college basketball and stuff like that. So go ahead. You introduce our segment today of Where You At.
All right. So last week, as you recall, we had a running back. This week, we got a quarterback for you. We got a
Wait, not just our running back. Let the audience know, for those who missed it, who we focused on.
Yeah, we had Earl Campbell, folks. We had the Tyler Rose, the Heisman Trophy winner, the banger, the Love
the Houston
Blue,
Oilers.
Houston Oilers. But now we shift to the quarterback position, and we got ourselves a Canadian quarterback. We got ourselves a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Ah.
Earl Campbell's a Hall of Famer, but it doesn't always have to be a Hall of Famer on Where You At Wednesday. It can be somebody that just makes you scratch your head and say, where you at? Where have you been? What have you done?
Yeah.
And reminisce
what
a little bit about
what
their
doing.
Career. Exactly. So our man today, for all you Washington Redskins fans out there.
Yeah,
Mark,
shout out to
Rick,
my boys Russell and Sean. They're big time Redskin fans, make you crazy.
We got Mark Rippon. So let me run down his bio a little bit. He was born in Canada, went to high school in Washington State, went to Washington State University. In 1986, was the sixth-round draft pick of the Redskins.
Wow, sixth-round.
Yeah, sixth-round. Nowadays, with Ryan Tannehill and all these guys going in the first round, you're saying to yourself, wow, Mark Rippon went in the sixth round. He spent his first couple years on IR, and then really his first full season was 1988. And why we remember Mark is in 1991, Mark
Rippon
threw for 3,500 yards, which back then was a lot.
A ton.
We got so for 5,000 this year, but 3,500 yards, 28 touchdowns, and led his Washington Redskins to Super Bowl 26. After a 14-2 season, and ended up being the MVP, beating the Buffalo Bills 37-24. So our man, Mark Rippon, ended up having six pretty good years with the Washington Redskins, where he was led the team, like I said, led the team to the Super Bowl, made two Pro Bowls, from 88 to 93. And then,
but wasn't like the main guy in the Pro Bowl. Let's let people know, to be honest.
No, he
anybody,
made it. He was a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, but people be making a Pro Bowl team on the back end. We're like, yo, can you walk?
No.
Not like the guys that are like initially voted in, but then the guys that come on after the guys are like, oh, I'm going to the Super Bowl or I'm injured, and then they become a Pro Bowler, you know?
No, you're right. You're right. But in that season, in 91 especially, that season when they went 14-2,
I think just so the audience knows, for some of our younger listeners, Mark Rypien was never, I mean, he was never, you weren't afraid of him. He wasn't, you know, the best quarterback in the league. And at the same time, often, even on his own team in the Redskins, you know, they were trying to, you know, fight to keep, he was trying to fight to keep his job. You know, there was different quarterbacks, like even, I believe, didn't he have a little battle towards the end with Heath Shuler?
And yeah, well, he only stayed there for 6 years, ended up going to Cleveland and the Rams and the Eagles, and so he became a journeyman after that. But
No, definitely, but I'm just saying, like, you know, they were trying to, you know, they were always trying to mess with his roster spot, just even like the battles that Doug Williams and Jay Schrader had there when Doug Williams won the Super Bowl with the Redskins. Shout out to Doug, the black quarterback. But Rypien definitely, you know, he had a cannon. He had a big arm. He used to throw some tremendous bombs. You know, that's the one thing that I remember about Mark Rypien. But, you know, it's fascinating to have someone who has won a Super Bowl ring, right? All these quarterbacks, we talk about getting the ring, winning the chip. But here's a guy that won a Super Bowl, and most people today don't remember and even think about or know who Mark Rypien is and who he was.
And he was a legitimate – I mean, he wasn't a caretaker. He was instrumental in that team going 14-2. But I think part of the reason why they don't remember is, like you said, he had quarterback battles, and Joe Gibbs won himself three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. So
yep.
Theismann, Doug Williams, and Mark Rypien. So I think everybody, you know, everybody remembers Joe Theismann and that run that he had, and then coming from Notre Dame, and then Lawrence Taylor breaking his leg at the end of his career, his last game.
Yeah, well, Theismann was a great quarterback for a while.
Yeah, Theismann. And then everybody remembers Doug Williams because of being the first black quarterback, winning his Super Bowl in 87.
But also his struggles, everybody also knew him, too, from his struggles at Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, with the Tampa Bay franchise, when they first started, Doug was there and Leroy Solomon, and I think people felt sorry for Tampa Bay. You know, for me, I like Tampa Bay. You know, they had the wild orange jerseys and, you know, the bright colors. I like them because my father's family's from Tampa, so I always rooted for Tampa a little bit, you know. But Doug Williams and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, they really struggled, but then really got good. I mean, I don't know if people know this, but in 1979, they lost to the Rams, who lost to the Steelers, and they lost in the NFC Championship. But Doug Williams and that team, which had some interesting players and a great defense, they it might have even been 9-6 or 9-7. They lost to the Rams, so the Rams made it to the Super Bowl with Vince Ferragamo and lost to my Pittsburgh Steelers. Remember that, and Wendell Tyler and those boys. So shout out to Doug for that. But this is Mark Rypien's day, and you know, I think it's fascinating because Mark, being from Canada, you know, people might have thought, well, maybe he would play in the CFL or whatever, but, you know, he definitely made his way in the NFL and had a really decent, if not solid, career. And
first,
so what did you find out?
Well, let me just say, first Canadian-born quarterback to start in the NFL and first foreign-born player to win a Super Bowl MVP. So even though he did his high school in Washington State, I mean, Mark's originally from Canada, so shout out to all of our Canadian listeners.
Yeah.
And then we did find out a little bit about his career after that. He had a brief stint in NASCAR, and like Joe
Gibbs.
Just
like following Joe Gibbs, right?
Yeah, he was an owner of a Sprint Cup championship team, and then eventually sold it to Jack Roush in 2008. So he got into the I wonder if there's some Gibbs connection there between Gibbs and Rypien, if they both got into it, because who would have thought that a kid from Canada who grew up in Washington State and ended up playing football for most of his productive career in Washington would end up getting into NASCAR? Maybe Joe Gibbs had something to do with it. And then the other bit of tidbit, which I found was pretty interesting, was and especially apropos, given that one of the referees in one of the replacement refs.
Yeah, let them know some of the replacement refs have come from lower levels of refereeing football.
Lower levels of refereeing football. And, in fact, one of them even came from the Lingerie Football League. So we found out that Rippon's daughter, Angela Rippon, was a quarterback of the Seattle franchise in the Lingerie Football League. So shout out to the Rippons with the jeans, football, quarterbacks, you know, good for him. You know what? Good for them. If you love the game, go play the game, whether it's the NFL, the CFL, whatever, the Lingerie
Arena.
League. Do your thing.
Oh, that's good stuff, man. Well, listen, but maybe we need a picture of his daughter in the Lingerie League.
I'm sure they exist somewhere.
Oh, boy. I tell you. But you know what? One thing I will say, that year when they won the Super Bowl, I was down at the University of Maryland, and the Washington Redskins, man, wow. That's when the Ghetto Boys had their song. And people, I mean, WPGC, the radio, Mark Rippon, the Redskins, their fan, I mean, the Redskin fans are some of the most loyal, craziest fans in the nation. If nobody's been around RFK or just been around, you know, that whole area and to see, you know, Redskin mania. And one of the reasons why, you know, obviously we picked Rippon and, you know, but now they're excited about RG3 and having a quarterback and maybe a decent team again. But it's just interesting because, you know, it is a storied, great historical franchise. And, you know, Mark Rippon definitely, you know, did his thing. And now we know where you at. But I wonder if he's, you know, I wonder if he's ever gotten involved in any coaching. We didn't see anything about that. Or, you know.
Yeah, if anybody knows
know.
About Mark Rippon, shout us out. Send us an email. Send us a hit us up on Facebook, Twitter. Let us know if you see Mark at the local A&P at the Shop and Stop, you know, at the Stop and Shop. Shout us out.
Maybe he's throwing fish to sea lions or something. You know, you don't know.
He probably still has an arm. You know, if you're an NFL quarterback,
he probably still has
a
great arm. You know, it's definitely interesting. So definitely, like Todd said, like Ray said, shoot us an email with your suggestions for where you at next week. And every once in a while, obviously we focus on former athletes, but just because, you know, Ray and Tay, we're comedians. We like to have fun and laugh. And every once in a while, just so you know, we might do a Ray and Tay on a where you at or somebody that's still currently playing because they're not doing too good. Like, yo, homie, where you at?
Buried
all right? You're not producing. So I think we're going to take a little break, and then we will be right back and jump into a little bit of fantasy, but really previewing the Thursday night game, NFL Network, and seeing the Giants travel down to the Carolina Panthers. We'll be right back.
See you on the flip side. We're back.
Yes, sir.
So, E, before we go in and preview this game, we got a couple of emails.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we'll take these two emails, and then we'll transition into the preview of the Giants at the Panthers. So, first one, apropos Canada and Mark Rippon, our Canadian friend Claude, a.k.a. Le Claude, number 66 from Montreal, Canada, he sends us an email, and he asks, who are the best and the worst commissioners in Major League sports history? And this is apropos of the NHL going on strike, essentially locking their players out, and
right.
the NHL having their fourth work stoppage in the last 20 years.
Right, it's not a strike. Not a strike
yeah,
like well, the teachers in Chicago who just came back to work yesterday.
Yeah, thank goodness. You know, the children
thank
need
goodness.
To be educated, so the teachers
got
to
educate
back,
them kids in Chicago, Shy-Illa, as they like to call it.
Exactly.
Oh,
but let's
oh,
take
man.
A shot at that. Who do you think are the best and the worst commissioners? I think the worst is probably easy. I think most people would agree on the worst, right? I think that it ends up being Gary Bettman. I mean, I think ultimately he took the NHL, and under his reign, I think he's had three work stoppages. in the NHL. Yeah. He's had a lockout in 94-95, a lockout in 04-05, and now again. So,
yeah, and it's like it just happened a couple of years ago. It's like, dude, what's going on with your game? You know, they took such a strong position last time. You thought that they really, by taking the whole year off, really, you know, cleaned up the game and got their issues resolved. You know, they have an NBC network deal. They're on Versus. I think the reality is, to me, the reason why hockey is the fourth or fifth sport in America is that, you know, and I grew up liking hockey, you know, in the 80s. You know, Ray and I were both Islander fans and loved Gretzky and Messier and all the different guys and, you know, Bossy and, you know, just we followed it. But I think hockey has sort of, you know, for those who love it, you know, shout out to you and you love it, but it's definitely fallen to the wayside because I think people don't have time to sit around and watch all the fighting. And I just think the game is maybe a little too fast and maybe it's harder for people to watch the puck and follow it on TV. You know, live it's a great game, but on TV. But at the
hockey
same time,
great
the fighting.
In the arena. Yeah.
Right, right. But also, if you notice, the Olympic hockey, the ratings are higher. Because Olympic hockey, they're not fighting, and it's just such an open game, and it's more scoring and the passing. I love Olympic hockey. I will be watching Olympic hockey coming up in 2014, and I can't wait, whether America wins or loses, you know. And, of course, I'll be rooting for America. But
Sochi,
you know,
Russia, you ready?
Yo, listen, I mean, if I got to watch Sweden and Russia in the championship, I'll watch it because Olympic hockey is just great to watch, you know, or Canada versus Sweden. But hopefully it's America versus Canada and we get to pay them back for their win and you know, in 2010. But I think, Batman, I would agree. For me, I would say the best, I give Pete Rozelle a lot of love. You know, I think Tagliabue and this clown now, Roger Goodell, who I can't really stand, I think they're holding the game up. I think the owners of the NFL have really pushed it in terms of, like, your Al Davises, the owners in Kansas City, Art Modell in Cleveland, who, you know, really got Monday Night Football started, and, you know, the Cleveland Browns were the first team. Were part of the first game of Monday Night Football. And, yeah, Tech Schramm. But the different owners really helped excel with the game. But Pete Rozelle was definitely seemed like just class and really took the NFL to another level, especially with, you know, more drug testing and stuff like that. But I got to say it's David Stern. I think David Stern definitely benefited from, you know, the whole cleanup of basketball where people just thought it was a bunch of guys doing cocaine and partying in the late, you know, mid to late 70s. I mean, from after, what was his name, Larry Fluff. Fleissig, was it Larry? I forgot, not Larry O'Brien, but the guy that was there before Stern, they finally, you know, started to clean up the game. And then you had Magic and Bird, and then you had Michelangelo, Michael Jordan. So that's what really took the NBA and the whole Dream Team in 92 to make it go so international and so abroad, where you had the mega superstars, and Jordan took marketing and the commercials with him and Spike Lee and just Coke and Hanes and everything and all, you know, McDonald's, took it to a whole nother level and took commercials and marketing to a whole nother level. And just the way they branded Nike and Jordan. And basketball still markets its players individually better than any other sport. And I think it, you know, it creates just a bond with the fans that, you know, no other commissioner and league does. Stern is great. You know, they did great expansion. While other places expanded and didn't do so well, he expanded in Minnesota and Charlotte. And did really well. You know, obviously the franchises bounced around. Charlotte went to New Orleans, but now they have the Bobcats again.
And into Florida, the Miami Heat expansion.
Yeah, Miami
lot,
Heat.
Yeah,
Orlando. Orlando, Miami Heat, you know, two good franchises. But I think, you know, really having it in Minnesota and stuff like that, I mean, it's clearly Stern to me.
So you give it to David Stern? So I have a couple of comments. So I think my personal because the NFL is the number one sport, I think I got to give it to Pete Rozelle. Just this idea of getting football, packaging it, and putting it on television, that to me, that gave – he did the blueprint. Now, you're giving more of the credit to the owners, and I'm giving just as much credit to the commissioner and saying, okay, he gave the blueprint to Tagliabue, who then gave it to Goodell, and now they're a $9 billion juggernaut. So my personal – I see David Stern, and I think he's great. But I personally would give it to the NFL just because of where the NFL is now. But another comment, another feather in David Stern's cap is the fact that people don't remember that up until 1982, when the Sixers were playing the Lakers, they were still playing these games on tape delay. Everybody forgets that these games, that these NBA best-of-seven series,
again,
the playoffs and the championship, this was on tape delay. Could you imagine if in this day and age of the internet, if we had things on tape delay? So David Stern cleaned up the NBA, said, look, guys, this is clownish, the fighting that we had, the fighting and the drugs. And he locked down the TV, and like you said, he markets individual players better than any other sport does. So I give David Stern a double thumbs up.
But international, I think the way that they've taken their game, when you go internationally now, to me, the two biggest international sports are soccer and basketball. They play basketball, Greece, Israel, all over Europe, even now the Angola teams and stuff like that. I mean, basketball is huge.
That's for sure.
Look how great the Argentina and Spain teams are. I mean, it's, you know, and then you have all these international players in the NBA, and largely because of the Dream Team. But Stern gets credit for that, to making that happen, you know?
That's true. And I think that football doesn't really have a chance. They're trying to put up a team in London.
Oh, it's horrible.
Ridiculous.
Please.
And
nobody
NFL
wants to go to London, you know, six times or eight times a year to go over there and play. And it's not working. And they didn't
really
have great support.
They're trying,
you know,
too hard. I mean,
they'll sell out one game.
They'll sell out one game a year, which is fine for all the expats and all the people who like it for the newness and the freshness. But ultimately,
they would do better going to Mexico, I believe.
You're right. I'll go with that. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our second email. We got Big Jim in New York sending us an email, and I guess he's ready for that game, which we're about to preview. And his question is, should I pick up any of these receivers in the Thursday night game, so namely Brandon LaFell, or should I pick up a giant receiver given that we've got some injuries? It looks like Bradshaw,
Hakeem Nicks,
Deal, and possibly Hixon are all going to be out. Should I pick up Ramses Barton or any other giant receiver, maybe Ruben Randall or Brandon LaFell? Obviously, Brandon LaFell is the better, more proven commodity of all those guys. But what do you think? Is there a pickup? Is there a fantasy pickup this week at wide receiver?
I mean, everybody sometimes loves, you know, to start off your fantasy week. You know, you get some extra early points. You know, I mean, it all plays itself out. But obviously, to me, I don't know if Stewart's going to be, good again. He just came back from his injury. I like, if you have a flex or a deeper league, Tolbert, but as a flex receiver or third receiver, and, you know, bye weeks haven't started yet, so you don't really need to start, you know, guys that aren't, you know, studs. Brandon LaFell is a solid number two receiver. So I think he would be a good pickup to, you know, keep on your team and on your bench, and he'll, you know, fill in fine for bye weeks. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously on the Giants, the running back, Andre Brown, I think he's going to be good. But I also I could see Barton, who's a big guy and, you know, is getting some targets.
Ramsey.
Eli seems to like him. And I think, you know, him and Cruz might be a nice little pair. Randall might be, I don't think he's going to get as many targets. But I could see Barton being a good move. In this game, though, I would stay away from I'd play either quarterback, but I would stay away from either team defense, you know, just on the fantasy side. But why don't we just, break down the game? What are you thinking? Even with the Giants' injuries going, you know, both have short rest. Both teams are 1-1. What do you think, Giants going to Carolina?
I think it'll be a slugfest in the sense that it'll be a sloppy game. I think that both teams on the short week of rest, I think Carolina, Jonathan Stewart, I don't know if he can play on 4 days. You know, 4 days after he played with that bad ankle, I don't know if he can come back and be healthy. Both teams, I mean, the Giants have been good against the run, but Carolina's been getting, the Giants have been better against the run. Carolina's been getting lit up. I mean, they're giving up 100 and almost 150 yards a game against the run. So when they play Tampa and New Orleans, who aren't two great rushing teams, they still gave up a lot of yards on the ground. The problem is I'm not sure the Giants can take advantage of it, right? Carolina's got a weakness with their run defense, but I'm not sure that the Giants, with their two running backs, you know, with Ahmad Bradshaw out, I'm not sure that that these
Brown
guys,
Brown
and Wilson, can take advantage of it, right? So to me, the Giants now aren't great at running the ball, and they've got, you know, Hickson and Nix down at receiver, so now you're going to start double teaming Bennett and your boy, the salsa dancer
Victor Cruz, baby.
So I'm not
as
sure
my
the
3-year-old
Giants can
William Cruz says Victor Cruz, baby.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Giants could put up 41 points like they did last week against Tampa Bay and 25
well,
in the
your ex Cowboy is going to have to step up. Marcellus Bennett's going to have a, you know.
Don't say his name.
Don't be upset.
Listen,
I bet you he has, you know, a touchdown, 6 receptions, 80 yards. I bet you he has a big game. Look, Eli threw for 510. So I think against Carolina, you know, their defense is definitely better than last year's. They got some of their guys back. And the running game, they were 3rd in the NFL in rushing last year. And last week they put up like 219 yards, and week one they had 10 yards. So, you know, which Carolina – the problem is with Carolina is that they have set, you know, sort of like the read option plays and set running plays with Cam Newton. So you don't know if he's going to give it to D'Angelo Williams, Stewart, Tolbert, run it, screen pass,
take it
throw
himself.
To Steve Smith, throw it to Greg Olsen, throw it to Brandon LaFell. That offense is lethal, okay? The Panthers – to me, the Panthers are legit. And they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. I think they're a lot better than most people predicted or thought, and they look good.
I think they
obviously
win the game.
Yeah, well,
because it's
you
at
know.
Home, and the Giants are banged up. The Giants lose an offensive lineman, 2 impact offensive players.
Yeah.
I like Carolina.
No, I hate to go against the Giants. I hate to go against the Giants, but I could see Carolina pulling this one out 24-20, 24-21. It's going to be tight. You know, the thing that scares me is that Giants secondary is bad, T. I mean, you know, Ray, I got to say, you know, it's obviously they lost their starting corner in the beginning of the season. Another Achilles for Thomas, Terrell Thomas. But Prince Amukamara hasn't really stepped up. They lost their safety last year Ross went to Jacksonville. And I don't know. I'm not really feeling their corners and their secondary. And
well,
so
the
if
Giants
that pass
live
rush,
and die by that front four, right? If that front four
exactly.
gets it's been their formula to win Super Bowls, right? But they're either a Super Bowl team, a Super Bowl winning team, or an 8-8 team. If that front four gets to the court, now look, you obviously need a linebacking crew and you need a secondary. But if that front four can get to the quarterback, it covers up a lot of weakness in your secondary. And they didn't do it against Dallas, and they lost. And ultimately, I think they won the second game on offense, actually. But I don't know that they can do it to Cam. I think Cam can punish them a little bit. Plus, he's run the ball.
Cam.
Really?
Oh, Cam. Cam. Yeah,
Daddy, Cam for me.
You got to love Killer Cam, man. I mean, people talk about a sophomore jinx. I don't think so. You know, and this guy – all they did was rip him. All the critics, oh, he doesn't understand a pro offense. He can't do this and that or whatever. And for me, and I was like, wait a minute. I saw this guy play in the SEC all season long. Granted, it was only one season. But my eyes didn't lie to me what I saw. He was dominant. I mean, when I was looking at him, sometimes I was like, is he real? Like, he was like a superhero. I mean, I saw him that game when it came back against Bama and the great battle against Arkansas. When he was at Auburn and won the Heisman, I mean, he was incredible, Cam Newton. So to me, I was like, well, why can't it translate, you know? And, oh, you can't do this in NFL and you got to be more accurate. Well, okay, but I think the kid was humble enough and hungry enough. And people, you know, listen, I always tell people, don't let critics tell you what you can't do because they don't know. They don't know. People can never measure a man's heart and his discipline and his work ethic.
So I'm guilty.
They can guess
I'm guilty
and assume. Huh?
I'm guilty as charged. I'm guilty as charged.
Oh, no,
I was one of those guys.
You already sent out your apology letter.
I was one of those guys that said that Killer Cam was great in the SEC, great at lower-level college football, and then great in the SEC, you know, the best conference by far in college sports. I just didn't think that translated to the NFL just because of the style that he ran. But you know what? He was so physically more talented and more gifted than anybody else that they kept it simple, right? He didn't have to go through all these complex reads and progressions because his natural talent, even in the SEC, led them. Remember when they were down 3 touchdowns to Alabama, he came back and won, and they won the national championship against Oregon. So my letter started with, Dear Cam, Dear Killer Cam, I apologize for underestimating your ability to be potentially star quarterback in the NFL.
Hey, and
who's
starting to write a letter now, T? Right?
Who's that?
You know who's starting to write a letter? A Hall of Fame and maybe one of the top two best players in NFL history of all time. Jim Brown is getting ready to send out a letter and write it to Trent Richardson. Because he talks smack that Trent Richardson was regular and looked average. And Trent Richardson was a monster at Alabama, but surely didn't look regular.
Monster.
And right now, week two in Cleveland game against Cincinnati, woo! Richardson is not looking that regular to me.
He was a monster as Mark Ingram's backup. You kept saying to yourself, Mark Ingram won the Heisman. And I was saying to myself, Mark, you need to leave because this kid's
you're not the best running back on your team.
You're not. You won the Heisman, and you're not the best runner. That's how good Trent Richardson was, and I'm glad he's done some things in Cleveland. I'm glad he didn't start his career.
I think he's
going
to have a good career. The guy, if he stays healthy, and you know, we wish that for all players, but if he stays healthy, man, sky's the limit for that dude. He's a baller, and he looks like he's going to ball out. I hope Brandon Wheaton could get it, you know, put it together. So you got to give me a prediction. I got 24-21 or 24-20 Panthers before we close out the show. Wes Ray's pick for tomorrow night's Giants-Panthers game.
Yeah, I got 28-24 Panthers. So very similar. I think the Panthers ultimately pull it out. I think that the home field advantage makes the difference.
All right. Well, listen, you know, we want to thank you all for listening. Definitely come back. We'll be back on Friday, the 21st of September at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific for my West Side folks. And, you know, we're glad, man. We're enjoying it, and we hope you guys are enjoying some sports talk and, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know. Make sure you, you know, check out some of the entertainment stuff.
Yeah, if you've got some topics, whether they're serious or comedic or somewhere in between, send it to us. You know how to reach us, Ray and Tay Today. That's RAEANDTAYTODAY, and that's at Gmail, Twitter, Facebook, anything. Send us some topics. If you want it to be interactive, we're happy to take your calls, your emails, your tweets.
And, Ray, I didn't tell you this, but I might be working on a guest for Friday. I might have a stand-up comic who travels the nation and the world. I don't want to give out the name because it's not solidified yet, but we might have a stand-up comic on the show who actually happens to be a big Redskins fan. So we could get into a little sports with him. So that might be interesting, and he could tell us, you know, where he does his comedy at and where he'll be, you know, next and stuff like that. So we'll see what happens.
Like
so, yeah, man. So, all right, y'all. Listen, thanks for listening, and we'll see you Friday at 7. And, you know,
catch
thanks
you on
for,
Friday.
Talking sports with friends, Ray and Tay Today.
We're out.
leak. I'm back up in this TV. My second album, True Speaker. And this track right here is crazy. I'm down.
Cause I knew Santa Claus couldn't save my soul. If you had the cars that I had to hold since I was 9 years old, trust me when I tell you, the next year would fold. More than just bold, bullets over Broadway. It went down the Harlem Broadway. Pops were shot, moms was too. Dad is dead and moms were shot in the head. And now she's home just lounging, just chilling in the bed. Truth is I spit nice and most of y'all off the top of my head. Shoot at y'all and I spray all day. I give two F's about to say about May. I'm just here to bring that crazy poetry. Sometimes I got that speak truth attitude. Don't you understand that I'm a little bit rude? Lyrically shrewd, switch up my mood. I used to be the type to steal your honey type of dude. And now I'm working on my bad attitude.